On tonight's show, John Holmes goes off target.
Marcus Brigstock goes offshore.
Pippa Evans goes off her food.
And Mitch Benn goes off his rocker.
I'm Steve Punt.
I'm Hugh Dennis.
And you're listening to...
The Noel Show!
By the year 2012, Skynet had constructed a network of computers, machines that humans relied on for their everyday lives. And then, one fateful day in late June of that year, the machines became aware.
Sorry, for technical reasons, this cache point is out of action.
The organization to blame was called NatWest. On Misjudgment Day, millions of customers experienced chaos. Only one man could save humanity.
Come with me if you want some cash.
Yes, there is another way, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is back, and he's angry.
I'm looking for a man called Stephen Hester. That's what I think of your software upgrade.
But would Arnie be able to supply the same cybernetic services?
I'll be bank.
Yes, this was the week when we learned the reality of what happens when the computers develop a mind of their own. It wasn't quite as dramatic as the movies, but at least it only affected one bank. At others, it was humans who were at fault.
Hasta la vista, Barclays.
And I think that's enough, Terminator. Now, but it was...
I don't.
It was like a week from the future, because
Let
for some...
Let me carry on.
Because for some reason, the next election seems to have already kicked off. First, Ed Miliband started pitching for votes by saying sorry for all the things Labour got wrong last time, like not regulating the banks.
The banks must be regulated.
Thank you. And also allowing in unlimited numbers of immigrants, admitting now that it would have been better if, for example, Gordon Brown had been kept in Scotland. Confusingly, though, Miliband also attacked the coalition's immigration cap. Now, I'm not entirely sure what that is, but it sounds like a politically incorrect version of the sorting hat from Harry Potter.
This one's American. Chief executive of Barclays. Slytherin.
Labour's proposals include...
Forcing medium and large employers to declare if more than a quarter of their workforce is foreign.
Which should affect pretty much every Premier League team. And when you watch England trying to pass, you can see why.
But we must remain positive. Given that had we won, we would have faced Germany, all that's really happened is that we've lost on penalties 4 days early.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, the Conservative leader seems to have decided to release the first teaser trailer for life under a post-coalition government. First up, cutting benefits. Now, this seems to signal a move back to traditional party territory. The Tories under Cameron have been like a band who keep trying to do new material, but whose hardcore fans just want the old hits.
Thank you. Thank you. We'd like to do one from our new manifesto now. It's called Renewable Energy.
Play benefit crackdown.
Okay, okay, this is a new song. It's called Could It Be a Tax Dodge?
Gary Barlow in concert there. They also want to limit child benefit to 3 children per household, or 4 if one of them can be left in a pub. The most controversial idea put forward, though, was to cut housing benefit for the under-26s.
Yes, which seems a bit drastic, especially since this age group will already have 30 grand's worth of debt from tuition fees. But there are alternatives in any case. If we could persuade Apple to launch a new product every month, many 16 to 25-year-olds will happily live in tents outside their stores. And between that, trying to get out of the Isle of Wight Festival and queuing for food at the Olympics, they will have no need of any permanent... residents of any kind. So, depressingly, the next election campaign seems to be well underway with all the parties. The Conservatives...
want to cut benefits because that's what the focus groups tell them.
Labour...
want to cut immigration because that's what the focus groups tell them.
And the Lib Dems...
held a focus group and came out very depressed.
Thank you very much.
So sad news this week is the very last giant tortoise of his kind, Lonesome George, died peacefully at his home in the Galapagos Islands, aged about 200. Scientists say his giant genes live on, though, although definitely not in this next man, for whom the phrase giant genes means a pair of trousers from the Build-A-Bear workshop. Alive from his home on the Now Show, it's John Hart!
Thank you very much. Now, imagine the glee, if you can, on the faces of headline writers everywhere when on Monday it was noticed that Tropical Storm Debbie was heading for Dallas. Kind of thing happens, right? It's really sort of a once-in-a-lifetime moment for a weather forecaster. It's one of those moments you think will never actually happen in a million years, like learning you've been unsubscribed from invitations to LinkedIn, or hearing that MC Hammer is coming back for a duet with MC Escher.
You can't touch this.
Why not?
Because it's not really there, it's an illusion of perspective.
Now, something else you'll never see, of course, okay, is England winning a penalty shootout, right? Now, we're coming up to the Olympics, and if Danny Boyle, who's organising the opening ceremony, as I'm sure you know, if he wants to properly celebrate the traditions of this fair nation in the opening ceremony alongside his village green and his cricket pitches, what he needs to do, right, is reflect one of our very finest traditions. What he should have in the opening ceremony is 11 overpaid men with varying levels of ludicrous haircut, right, kicking balls at a gap and missing. Now, you see, I don't know why we're surprised that this happens, OK? Because England losing European tournament is a tradition that goes back centuries.
So you join us here with England on their home turf. It's the turn of this English legend to step forward and take the shot. Oh, he has missed. King Harold has missed here at Hastings. Well, now, it's danger here for England. The Frenchman steps up for his turn. Even see it coming. It's going to be interesting to see what tomorrow morning's tapestries make of this.
But even when we lose, it unites us as a nation, don't you think? I mean, last Monday morning, just to give you an example, after the England-Italy match, I was looking at the Twitter, and I was most amused to see someone tweeting from their commuter train that the driver had made this announcement, right? He went, good morning, this is the 7:32 service to London Charing Cross. Although, as my name is Ashley, I might miss and end up in Liverpool Street. Now, England may have dribbled out of the tournament, OK, but come on, there is still much to celebrate. Because what we are good at, of course, in English football, is the montage. Last weekend, when England went out, it was a cover version of In the End by Linkin Park, right, over which flowed lingering images of men kicking and running, accompanied by the odd shot of Wayne Rooney's hair, looking like someone had absent-mindedly left some Hessian on a clay potato. Now, I love a sports montage, OK? Right, everyone likes a sport. Even if, like me, you have no real interest in football outside watching England fail in major tournaments, right? Everyone likes a montage over stirring music, guaranteed to tug at what remains after a penalty shootout of your tattered scraps of emotions. Right, it's a technique we could employ everywhere else. We're very good at them. The BBC montage department is world-class, of that there's no doubt. So, let's deploy them in other areas of programming. Right, how much better would it be, for instance, if the Today programme ended not, as it always does, like this?
Our editors, Ollie Stoneley and Claire Thorpe and Alexis Condon, here in Birmingham.
You know, where James Naughtie totally mistimes the pips, that right, ending. But a Today Show highlights package is what we need, like this.
Good morning, this is Today with Sarah Montague and Justin Webb.
The headlines this morning. The headlines this morning.
Lloyd George would have liked to have been alive today.
The paper says the Prime Minister is misguided, unnecessary and liable to backfire.
The brief reunion of all five Spice Girls.
Local loyalists reacted angrily.
The Tooth Fairy doesn't work on the Treasury staff anymore.
That's it from us. Our editors today, Ollie Stone Lee and Adam Comiskey. Good morning from us all.
And ditto, the shipping forecast, right, would be, yeah, be far more moving, more emotional experience if it was cut together like this.
And now the shipping forecast, issued by the Met Office on Tuesday the 26th of June 2012. There are warnings of gales in south of Syria, Fisher...
Now, what's more, this technique could work all across Radio 4, all right? Tell me, would it really undermine the feminist agenda of Woman's Hour too much? Right, if, after discussing the empowerment of women and inherent sexism in the workplace where women are still judged on their looks rather than on their skills, would it be too much if the discussion ended with this? Pretty woman. Or worse? I'm a body girl in the body world. I say worse, I mean better. Raise a smile, wouldn't it? You know, cheer up, Jenny, really, if you're listening. You know, You're much prettier when you're not grumpy. But it doesn't have to be montages, though. You see, because you could also improve stuff with commentary.
People going back to work as a result of that.
Ian Duncan Smith, thank you very much.
Thank you, Evan.
And there's the final whistle. Well, in the end, they were fairly evenly matched here today, but let's find out what the captain of the Today programme thinks. Gabby is with him now.
John Humphreys, how do you think it went?
Well, the lads played good this morning, and I was proud of them. They gave 110%. But what you have to remember is that interviewing is a game of two halves. And you have to say hats off to both sides. But, you know, at the end of the day, interviewing is a funny old game, and there are no easy guests at this level.
So the final score then is 0-0 here at the Today programme. So disappointing for everyone listening at home.
And if that wasn't bad enough, now it's time for Thought for the Day. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Mitch Benn.
Once upon a time, back when I was 22, still figuring out what to do, I was signing on back then, declared each penny that I earned, and at least I knew the rent was paid. My parents lived 300 miles away, so I could hardly live with them. And I gave it all back. Every year I pay in tax, many times all that the social gave to me. And I cough up every cent, because I know it pays the rent of some dreaming kid who's who I used to be. And wasn't there supposed to be a thing called social mobility? Get on your bike and look for work, wasn't that the way? Well, not now, not anymore, not for the undeserving poor. Wherever you come from, that's where you'll stay.
Now, in one of the most baffling moves of recent times, the government has announced that it wants to
put an economic value on all of Britain's countryside.
There's only three reasons you find out how much something is worth: to sell it, to insure it, or to brag about it to the neighbours.
Hey, France, you seen our snow den? Guess how much that's worth then?
Not as much as Mont Blanc.
All right, what about Tom Jones?
Oh, we have Johnny Hallyday there. You win. You win.
Why do we want to put a value on Britain? Are we putting it up for sale?
For sale. United Kingdom. Several owners kept in the same family since 1707. Immaculate throughout. Logbook goes all the way back unbroken to 1066.
Nah, not buying it. It's a cut and shut. Scotland's been welded on. And it's about to fall off again.
Yeah.
This is true, of course. The value of our landscape will indeed go down if Scotland gets independence, because then we'll be a semi-detached. So, why are the government spending public money on this obvious bureaucratic nonsense? Well, it's called
natural capital assessment.
What are they on about? And what's the point? Rather ominously, it appears that a lot of the point is so they know what to protect and what to develop.
I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils, beside the lake, beneath the trees, adding very little value outside the early spring period. So build a Tesco's, please.
And how does it actually work? Well, apparently,
economists will devise methods to value environmental assets.
Once they've got all their figures, then surely there's going to be a temptation to try and increase these values.
Now, I tell you what, love, it's nice this Cumbria, but I tell you what, you want to knock these lakes through. Keep your original glacial features, but extend it into one big lake. That's what the punters want to see. And there, where you've got these fields either side, we can put down some decking now. Lovely. On those cliffs up there,
we were thinking a really big flat screen TV.
Beautiful. Mind you, you want to be careful. That's a load-bearing mountain.
Now, this valuation will be overseen by Dieter Helm, an Oxford economics professor, but with a Bond villain's name.
You expect me to talk, Dieter Helm?
No, Mr. Bond. I expect you to calculate the economic value of the local woodland.
Now, Dieter... Dieter Helm has been appointed by the Natural Capital Committee, a cabinet subcommittee which is...
independent of the government.
But chaired by George Osborne. That's independent of government, but chaired by the second most powerful person in the government. That's a bit like saying you're going to get someone impartial to look into a takeover by a major broadcaster and then putting someone with a known preference for that broadcaster to oversee it. I mean, imagine that. But maybe natural capital assessment is part of the solution. The economy is perhaps in such bad shape, the Chancellor's organised a fire sale. Come next summer, we'll go on our holidays to find Snowdonia up on bricks and a big sign saying...
this area now closed. Our mountains have gone to Dubai.
And in her interview with The Guardian, Spelman also said, perhaps realising the story wasn't bizarre enough already...
we assume that bees will just carry on pollinating the trees, for example. Well, if they didn't, it would cost the economy £400 million.
The government have worked out the cost of bees not pollinating trees. Do they know something we don't? Are bees planning to strike during the Olympics?
At the workers!
Or maybe they're just planning to take 4 days off because it's their queen's birthday. Yes. But it didn't end there. Oh, no. It turned out that the government have also calculated that...
a tree in an urban area confers £38,000 worth of economic and social benefits.
What? How do they calculate that?
Well, minimum wage is £6.19.
Right, but trees can't photosynthesise at night. So adjusting for daylight hours and seasonal variation in ability to sit under a tree, we calculate trees should be earning £29,479.
Yeah, but Caroline Spelman has budgeted £38,000 of benefits for trees.
Exactly, which means either A...
we are overpaying trees by £9,000 a year... just to look nice, which is not just a waste of public money, but also verging on sexual harassment in the workplace.
Tell you what, you don't do much, you've got a cracking set of branches.
Or, B,
trees are on the fiddle to the tune of £8,500 a year.
Or, C,
the non-photosynthesising elements of a tree earn them substantial freelance earnings a year, which are then hidden from the taxman via a trust in the Channel Islands.
Yes. Although, of course, to be fair, photosynthesis is a specialised skill, like running a bank. It all sounds faintly absurd, but maybe, just maybe, it's part of a genuine concern to protect what's left of our environment. The government have already said they're going to plant 1 million new trees during this parliament, which, apart from anything else, if their figures are right, gives them the ability to claim that they have provided £38,000 million worth of new public services.
And given that the Conservative Party logo is a tree, it may provide an ingenious form of subliminal advertising.
Ah, cunning. Thank you very much. Please welcome Marcus Brigstock.
Thank you and goodbye. Time has come for us to go our separate ways, and I want you to know that it's not me, it's you. The low-tax Channel Island, Jersey, announced this week that senior politicians on the island are considering leaving the UK and going fully independent. To this we say...
goodbye,
I have had it with bankers, multimillionaires and business people and the rest announcing their imminent departure from the UK every time they're held to account by those of us who pay our taxes and vote. They're like teenagers in a row with their parents.
Fine, I'll just go then and you'll never see me again and I'll be homeless and I'll be a prostitute or even worse, I'll do hedge funds. Is that what you want? I'm leaving and don't try and stop me. I'm going. As soon as Hollyoaks is finished.
So for those threatening to leave when they're asked to pay their share of the cost of living here, go.
Go on now, go. Walk out the door. Just turn around.
Yes, and once you've gone, we will survive very happily. In fact, I will happily drive any of you to the ferry terminal and push you off it. Here's a thought. You know, just so we don't have to keep coming back to this tiresome discussion, it's a simple, honest, decent proposal. Rezzy, drum roll, please. Everyone has to live where their money is. Ta-da! See? Easy. Now off you go.
Hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more.
Anyway, we're not going to need any extra money that could have been contributed by high earners and successful businesses because David Cammoron has reminded us... in very timely fashion, who's really to blame for all our ills? Yes, it's the working classes. Scummy, scrounging little piggies, the lot of them. Too much attention on a budget with all the consistency of a toddler on speed. Oh, pasties, caravans, petrol, look, a monkey, tax it. Too late, it's moved. I need a lie down. I mean, I'm not so stupid or naive to believe that welfare is sacred and mustn't be touched.
All cuts at all times are wrong, no matter what. Even if the spending doesn't help and we can't afford to keep it up. But say no to cuts. I try not to read too much in case it turns out I'm wrong.
Sadly, that's me when I was a student. Every protest, the promise of a free lift to London and a sandwich. Grow up. I mean, it might not be our fault, but we're in a pickle bigger than Eric Pickles. Inside the world's biggest pickle at the International Festival of Massive Pickles with a man playing a piccolo. But when I heard this inherited multimillionaire Exetonian talking about a culture of entitlement, well, I'm sorry, but my irony meter went through the red and then exploded in a gale of bitter laughter. It actually went, yeah! I was furious because I've only just had a new irony meter installed after Rebecca Brooks complained about how she'd been unfairly reported by the British press. It went off with some force that morning. A massive dollop of irony landed right in my copy of The Sun on Sunday. I could barely use it for wiping. David Cameron mentioned those who work hard and do the right thing. You know, good people, the heart and soul of Great Britain. And he pitted those people against those on benefits, which... frankly, seems reasonable, doesn't it? Except that David Cameron knows that they are the same people. Only 1 in 8 people claiming housing benefit is out of work. The rest are low earners, doing what they can, but not earning enough to live near the shops and factories and schools and hospitals that they work in to keep the country going. And it's hardly Cameron's fault. Sitting behind the cabinet of new, shiny, compassionate Conservatives, each with a tired-looking Lib Dem on their lap being burped after another bottle feed of right-wing formula that they can't digest, are a great many slathering, vicious, bloodthirsty thugs who use the word tradition to justify ideologies the rest of the world grew out of decades ago. These people have no idea how the rest of the world lives. Yes, cuts to housing benefit will, of course, mean that a great many working-class families... will have to use their second car to get to work. Or take their children the 40 miles to school. Yeah, unless they're at boarding school. Ha, that's what I went to. Never did me any harm. Unless anyone says the word mummy. Then I wee myself and cry into an inky handkerchief until matron makes me num-nums. I only wish that low-income workers were able to hold the government to ransom by threatening to leave the country when they're challenged. Just to wake up one day to a country where the only people at work spend their days moving fictional sums of money from one screen to another in the hope that the sums get bigger and they get a bonus. And somewhere in the distance, as the streets lie unswept, unpoliced, shops shut, hospitals empty, schools boarded up, they hear...
Goodbye, goodbye, whatever you hear from your eye.
Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pippa Evans.
It was noted in the papers on Monday that Britain now has the fattest women in Europe. Don't worry, we are beating Europe at something. So I was asked if I would write this song about us being fat ladies, and I said, well, I feel a bit uncomfortable about doing that because I am a perfect size 8. Shut up. I could be a size 8. This is radio, yeah? I'm very fit, I'm super well, my BMI's just right. I exercise, I never fry, my figure is quite slight. I know some of you struggle to keep off the extra pounds, but I'll let you know a secret that'll never let you down. Be more like me, be more like me. Drink tons of water every day and put that mayonnaise away. Be more like me, be more like me. When invited out to dine, always make sure you decline. Starve yourself without complaint. Have a grape if you feel faint. Be neurotic and pedantic. Let fat content make you frantic. Buy small clothes as an incentive. Burn them when it's not effective. Break the fridge at 9:30, then drown yourself in pints of wine. It's simple, see. Just be more like me. I'm off to Greg's.
Now, the Queen, of course, met Martin McGuinness this week, shook hands, all very historic. But we've asked our audience what was the most awkward social encounter that they have ever had.
I excitedly asked a woman at the till in Waitrose if she was having a party. She told me the food was for her husband's funeral.
What's the most awkward social encounter you've ever had? I'm English. Every social encounter is awkward.
Someone came up to me once in a pub and asked if I knew where the toilets were. I couldn't for the life of me work out if they were a man or a woman. So I took a chance, told them that the ladies were behind them. I was wrong.
I suppose I'm not shallow honest, but on a second date, this guy turned up in sandals with socks. And then she's put, I'm nearly 50. I want a finished product, not a work in progress. Meeting my boyfriend's mother for the second time, I went downstairs to breakfast shortly after meeting her for the first time. That is quite awkward.
Chatting to a friend in a cafeteria queue about politics, I suggested to him that if Tony Blair wanted to become Labour leader, he needed to get rid of that dreadful mullet. I turned round, standing behind me, Tony Blair. What happened? He got his hair cut and went on to win 3 general elections.
Worst awkward social encounter, I met Martin McGuinness. What happened? Him. Hello, I'm Martin McGuinness. Me. Oh, your voice has changed.
What's the most awkward social encounter you've ever had? Meeting my former wife on a blind date. What happened? I remarried her. And then in brackets, how cheesy is that?
So thank you for sharing those with us. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye! That was an hour show starring Steve Punt and Hugh Dennis.
Yes, with the full team of Mitch Benn, Marcus Brigstock, Pippa Evans and John Holmes. And big lad John Humphreys did good.
That's right. It was written by the cast with additional material from Jack Bernhardt, Madeline Brettingham.
And substituted at half-time by Gareth Quinn, Sarah Morgan, Miranda Walker and Andy Walton.
It was developed a long time ago with Bill Dare and the producer, Victoria Lloyd.